0707. Please go check them out. Are you ready for this breakdown? Ooh, it is a good breakdown. And hamburgers, I'm going to get normalized.
This is FM 90.1 KZFR Chico, listener-supported community radio for the Sacramento Valley, the foothills, and beyond. Stay tuned for the Butte Report. Welcome to the Butte Report. Today is Thursday, March 18th. The Butte Report is a weekly program reporting on and analyzing issues that affect our lives and our livelihood by focusing on local government, including the Board of Supervisors, the various municipalities, and even school districts and water districts within Butte County. I'm your host, Sue Hildebrand. The Butte Report is made possible by the generous contributions of KZFR supporters and by Chico Hearing Aid Center, celebrating over 70 years of changing lives through better hearing. Chico Hearing Aid Center is committed to serving the community with any hearing issues. To schedule an initial hearing evaluation, Chico Hearing Center's phone number is 342-8132. Tonight we'll cover the class action lawsuit filed against the Gridley City Council, the Chico City Council, and the public records request filed by the American Civil Liberties Union of Northern California, and the strategic planning efforts by the Paradise Irrigation Districts. Interviews include Butte County-based attorney Richard Harriman, Brandon Green of the American Civil Liberties Union of Northern California, and Tom Lando, general manager of the Paradise Irrigation District. South County. A class action lawsuit was filed on March 1st against the Gridley City Council in Superior Court in Butte County. The plaintiffs, Scott McMillan, Michael McMillan, Allison Woolbert, and Tyrell Ford, are residents of the city of Gridley and customers and residential account holders for the electricity services. The sole provider of electricity service in Gridley is the Gridley Municipal Electric Utility, owned and operated by the city and ultimately responsible to the Gridley City Council. The class action lawsuit is based on the following points. Number one, municipal electricity rates in the state of California are constrained by the California Constitution. When a local government entity, such as Gridley, charges citizens for a specific government service, such as electric services, the rates shall not exceed the reasonable costs to the local government of providing the service. Number two, it also follows that electricity customers should not have to pay electric rates that are designed and levied in whole or in part for general revenue purposes for the city, rather than strictly for electric services. California government code and civil cases interpreting that code have found unequivocally that fees levied for general revenue purposes are taxes. Number three, in California, a tax must be approved by a vote of the electorate. The imposition of an illegal tax that hasn't been approved by the voters through excessive electric rates greater than the reasonable costs of electric service, or designed merely to extract funds for unrelated general revenue purposes, is an illegal tax and an unconstitutional condition placed on the residential customers. And point number four, the lawsuit argues the city of Gridley has a long-standing overt policy and practice of deliberately setting electric rates at levels that are substantially above the reasonable costs of providing that service, and it is done for the publicly acknowledged purpose of generating funds for the general revenue purposes in the form of a large annual transfer of rate proceeds from the electric fund to the general fund. The city has never put its electric rates to a vote of the electorate. The city not only acknowledges its rate practice, the lawsuit argues, but, quote, it is proud of it, boasting that the transfers to the general fund help the city do many good and important things for the general public, end quote. To put this simply, the argument by the plaintiffs is that the city is overcharging ratepayers and using the money to pay for general fund expenses. At the Gridley City Council meeting last Monday, the council discussed the lawsuit in closed session, and upon returning, the city's legal counsel issued the statement, "The council rejects the lawsuit as it is untimely." After reading the lawsuit, Butte County-based attorney Richard Harriman believes the case does have merit.
Thanks for calling, Sue. I reviewed the lawsuit brought by attorney Walter McNeil on behalf of the plaintiffs from the city of Gridley. And I think it sets out the claims that I would expect to see from a group of citizens bringing a class action similar to this one. The statement by the city of Gridley attorney about the suit not being timely filed is so vague it's pretty hard to ascribe any meaning to it. However, what I can say is that the lawsuit as it's currently pleaded will probably be challenged on a number of grounds just because that's what public agency attorneys do. One of them could be a failure to comply with a statute of limitations. I think the defect with that affirmative defense by the city is that this is a continuing and ongoing matter as of this time. So the conduct and action that's complained of by the class action plaintiffs is still going on with the collection of the fees for the electric service from this provided by the city's membership in the Northern California Power Association. So even if it's challenged in a pre-trial motion, the court's going to grant leave to amend if there is a statute of limitations which may apply to one of the claims or all of them. I have seen these suits before. I've seen the kinds of pleadings that public agency attorneys raise because they want to string it out. They want to run up the attorney's fees for the plaintiffs and petitioners in this case. However, in this case, because of the ongoing economic impact to the ratepayers and the power users, I think the court's going to be responsive to the substance of the claims. And I would assume that fairly early in the litigation, the plaintiffs will seek a temporary restraining order and or a preliminary injunction or some other administrative stay under their claim for writ of mandamus. I think the court is very likely to grant a temporary restraining order and or a stay of under the administrative mandamus. It's what they call equitable proceedings. So I think these plaintiffs will get their day in court, and I think they will get an opportunity to find out from the court whether the court agrees that their substantive claims have merit. So the answer to the second question is, I do think the case has merit. I do think the court will recognize that it has merit, and I think the court is likely to grant a stay of the collection, at least of the additional amounts that are complained of, so that the ratepayers can pay for the electric charges that they're using and that they will not be paying more than should be paid in the short term.
Richard Harriman, considering the fact that the current legal counsel is essentially named in the lawsuit, should we assume that the city of Gridley will ultimately hire outside counsel in order to take on this case?
I can't predict what the city of Gridley will do. I can say that if I were the city attorney that's been named or has potential exposure for legal malpractice, if he or she has advised the city improperly, I would expect the city of Gridley Council to get independent legal counsel to advise them on their potential claims or indemnification, claims against their current attorney or indemnification of the city by the current city attorney. That creates a conflict of interest. Therefore, they should get independent counsel to advise them on who they should retain. Second point, and the one I would expect would occur, is that the city attorney, or at least the independent counsel, will be advising them to tender this to their insurance carrier, which may be a risk management pool of which the city is a member. And that will allow the city of Gridley effectively to have attorneys representing them that are paid for through their insurance. And that may make a difference. I would expect that if that happens and the independent counsel advises them that the current city attorneys have improperly advised the city, that there will then be a cross complaint against the existing city attorneys, or perhaps a second action would be filed if they didn't want to try it in the same suit.
That was Butte County Attorney Richard Harriman. You are listening to the Butte Report on KZFR 90.1 FM, broadcasting from Chico. To the Chico City Council meeting this week, the council voted on new appointments to various city commissions. Appointments to the Arts Commission include Louis Nava, Kimberly Rinala, Daniela Ferguson, and Monica McDaniel. Appointments for the Bidwell Park and Playground Commission include Ann Jeanette Shadley, Jeff Glatz, Jesse Alexander, Megan Thomas-Petty, and appointments to the Planning Commission include Lindsay Poulin, Tony Scott, Paul Cooper, and Larry Wall. In addition, applications are currently being accepted for the Climate Action Commission, the Architectural Review and Historic Preservation Board, and the Airport Commission. Applications may be found at the city's website and must be received by 5 p.m. on Monday, April 12th. In another item, Vice Mayor Reynolds requested a city code enforcement review of municipal code from the Internal Affairs Committee. Councilmember Alex Brown asked for clarification of which code in particular Reynolds wanted reviewed. Reynolds stated she didn't have any code in mind, but was concerned about blight in the downtown area. During public comment, Jessica Gianola stated she was concerned that Reynolds' request to address blight was coded language for ridding the downtown area of unhoused people and their belongings. Gianola also suggested that a review of enforcement is a waste of money that could be better spent on addressing the crisis of homelessness. A motion to move the discussion of city code enforcement policies to the Internal Affairs Committee was passed unanimously. In legal news in the city of Chico, the American Civil Liberties Union of Northern California has submitted a public records request to the county as they relate to citations issued in Chico over the last 2 years for, but not limited to, storage of personal property in public spaces, civic center regulations, and sitting on sidewalks in commercial districts. The public records request also include the data associated with deaths in Chico as a result of exposure. The general argument is that all city ordinances apply to all residents, but the impact of the ordinance falls disproportionately on people who are homeless. I spoke with Brandon Green of the American Civil Liberties Union of Northern California and started by asking him to talk about why they are requesting this information and what they are looking for.
Over a series of months, we received several intakes from folks on the ground, concerned citizens and others with regard to what is happening in Chico. Some of those intakes were regarding either pending sweeps of homeless encampments or planned sweeps of homeless encampments, as well as this concern that Chico is sort of continuing to move forward with very targeted passages of ordinances that are meant either to criminalize the existing unhoused population or force them out, and to prevent other folks who might be housing insecure from coming to Chico. And because we received a series of these, it sort of prompted discussion. Discussion with some folks on the ground and discussion amongst ourselves about what it is that we do and do not know. And so whenever there are questions that are raised that need to be answered or further inquiry needs to be done, we usually do so through a Public Records Act request.
Brandon Green, is this the first step to a lawsuit against the city of Chico?
I can't speak to that. What I would say is that this issue is one that is impacting the region and the state. Maybe once or twice a week for the last several weeks, we've received intakes about unhoused populations being targeted. There's been a discussion of ordinance being passed in Santa Cruz, for example, that makes daytime camping unlawful in Santa Cruz. Chico has not only sort of banned the ability to be able to store personal belongings sort of on any street, on any park, or in any park in Chico, but also has made camping, lying, sitting, all of the sort of regular human behaviors unlawful for individuals who are unhoused. And not only has made them unlawful, but in many instances has removed the ability just to receive a citation and infraction, and has made these criminal offenses where individuals can receive misdemeanors. And so there's a whole web of ordinances that, when taken together, sort of make being an unhoused human being in Chico unlawful.
Brandon Green, you mentioned that you're also looking into the city of Santa Cruz. And of course, the homeless crisis exists throughout all of the state of California. Can you talk about how does Chico compare to other communities with respect to what you're calling the criminalization of homelessness?
Yeah, I think one of the differences is that Chico has a sort of series, a web of ordinances that you sort of have to take a step back and look at both individually and them together. So what is the climate that these several ordinances, when taken together, create? Whereas other jurisdictions might have a discrete ordinance that makes unlawful a certain thing, whether that is, again, the proposed ordinance in Santa Cruz that is making daytime camping unlawful and making it so that people have to move themselves and their belongings each day, or if it's RV bans that we're seeing across the state in several jurisdictions. In a lot of places, it is usually like a discrete ordinance, one ordinance that is targeting a specific thing, whereas Chico has sort of expanded the sort of behaviors that are being criminalized under the various ordinances, like having a specific ordinance that added a series of behaviors under an existing ordinance to make it even further expansive, for example, or, you know, expanding the bans to not for personal belongings, for example, to not only be every street, but every park, and being as comprehensive as possible to make it virtually impossible to participate in common things as a human being in Chico, to be unhoused with dignity.
Brandon Green, what is the timeline? What should citizens of Chico and really throughout Butte County, what is the time frame for the public records request? And then, of course, a follow-up of an analysis. And then if you did choose to submit a lawsuit against the city, I'm imagining it would be along the lines of Martin versus Boise and a violation of the Eighth Amendment and so on. What is the time frame from your perspective?
Sure. So the PRA was just submitted last week. Generally, you expect some response within 10 days, but particularly during the pandemic, oftentimes municipalities are asking for some sort of extension. So I suspect that we will get some sort of first production of documents within the next 30 days. Things have are necessarily delayed during the pandemic. And oftentimes when you request records such as the ones that we requested, they come in batches. And so it'll take some time to get records, to get a better understanding of what is happening on the ground, what the data sort of says on the ground, how that syncs up with the lived experiences of some of the folks who've been in contact with us.
That was Brandon Green of the ACLU of Northern California. You are listening to the Butte Report on KZFR 90.1 in Chico. We turn now to the Paradise Irrigation District. During the Camp Fire, along with over 14,000 homes destroyed, the entire water infrastructure for the city of Paradise was destroyed. Over the last 2 years, the Paradise Irrigation District, which supplies water to the town of Paradise, has been recovering from the destruction, rebuilding its infrastructure, and planning for the future. Last week, the PID staff and board of directors engaged in a 2-day strategic planning session focusing on 5 years into the future. I spoke with Tom Lando, general manager of the Paradise Irrigation District, and started by asking him to talk about where PID is in the process of recovery.
Sure. As you mentioned, the district has been working since the campfire, so 2+ years on rebuilding its infrastructure system. Most of the piping needed to be repaired or replaced. Much of that has been done. We had pre-campfire 10,500 customers. Now there are about 2,500 customers. We continue to work on the restoration. We're still a ways out from full restoration, but customers who want service, by and large, we can get service to.
Tom Lando, over the last 6 months, PID's board, staff, and even community members have been involved in the exercise of identifying the various strengths, weaknesses, opportunities, and threats to the organization. What are some of the most important themes that PID needs to think about and what the public needs to know about where you are?
Well, the first thing people need to know is that it is quality water, that there are no issues with the water that is delivered. That's critically important because there are rumors about water quality, which are simply untrue. The board, before I was hired, started a strategic planning session actually about a year ago and hired a consultant, Ricky Schaefer. And her first step was to interview the board and every staff member. And the board saw those results really for the first time last week. And frankly, were surprised. Admittedly, it was relatively shortly after the campfire, but they view the organization as a strong team working together. Frankly, the employees a year ago didn't feel that same support leadership, which is needed to move ahead. The district board clearly has a goal of being the best water supplier, period, not just in this area, but period, and wants to work to move towards that. So are going through a strategic planning process, and as you indicated, really started with the strength, weakness, opportunities, and threats. And actually now April 12th is our next session at 8:30 in the morning is when it'll start. And that's to try and move forward with a very defined, specific direction to make sure that we address the weaknesses were identified and the concerns expressed by staff. The main goal is to make sure that we meet the community's needs and the community views PID as a very positive partner in the rebuild and in going forward.
Tom Lando, now that you're really in the thick of this process, this five-year strategic plan, and there's still, of course, a lot of work to do. It's an ongoing process. It never quite ends for any functioning organization. Talk about some of the major goals, for example, that either the organization has discussed specifically or some of the ideas that you think are going to end up in that final product.
Sure. There's both internal and external. Internally, we have three different locations that are pretty removed from each other, and the internal goal is to make sure that we act as one organization, that people feel supported, that they know where we're headed. The external goal is to make sure that customers view PID as the very best water provider, period. It's a place they would choose to come. And those include things like responding to customer concerns, certainly within a day, and most of them trying to answer immediately. It means that if there are issues with the service, making sure that our shop is able to get on them right away. And right now, I think we're doing a pretty good job. We actually have undergone a change in staffing in several locations, and I think it's made the customer service greatly improved. I do want to amplify, correct one of the things you said. It's the organization as a whole. It's not the district manager. It's not the administrative staff. It's the district as a whole, moving as a whole together. I am here, hopefully, for a relatively short time period, and there'll be a new district manager. And one of the priorities that manager has to be to unify and provide direction to the district again, while providing quality customer service. The community is a key.